This episode of the Soxcast is brought to you by our new theme song created by Garden, who you can find at soundcloud.com/Western Desolation. Please be sure to stick around after the episode is finished to hear the theme song in its entirety. And with that, please enjoy the show. Just roll into a intro then?
Apparently.
All right. Give me a second. I need to wet the old whistle. People still say that, right? Wet the old whistle?
Definitely. Let's get your mouth all wet. Do not start the episode with this.
I'm totally not going to start,
the episode with
lots of mouth sounds. Just
nope.
Nah. That would be a... That'd be really gross if I did that. 2 years worth of content consumption flowed endlessly into the podcast. Hello. Hi. We're back. Welcome to the Soxcast, episode 167. Bet you didn't think I'd know that, did you? Bet you didn't think I'd have that locked in.
Incredible. I didn't know where we left off.
I'm literally just, look, professional as day one. Maybe a little more professional than day one. I think those day ones through day 150 were maybe a little rough back in the day. Remember outlines? Remember sticking to those like they were religion? That was rough. So did you miss us, everybody? Did you miss us? Of course you did, because you're a big baby who can't do anything or have an original thought or opinion of your own without someone just shoveling that shit right on into your brain meats. And lucky for you, we've got you covered for all of your toxic parasocial interaction. And we know that your minds crave that. We've had Rhett on VTuber duty for the last 2 whole years. Carefully examining that world and all the parasocial toxicity that it can breed. So, you know, we are more than prepared to be your bestest friend.
John, boyfriend experience, stream incoming.
And if you play your cards right.
John, you missed Valentine's Day. You fucked up.
Damn.
Oh, shit.
We are
like... Oh, you sell so much merch on that day of the John.
Damn. We had just... That's just typical Soxcast, right? Day late, a dollar short.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. We could have been big. We did not catch in on that big, the John boyfriend experience, mm-hmm. Valentine's Day. Man, we
just... Crazy for it.
God, why are we even back? Why are we even doing this? We've already fucked up right out the gate.
It was inevitable, really.
Yeah, it was inevitable.
Let's just try to salvage it.
All right. I guess I can jump back into things. Okay. Professional. The lips, the tip of the teeth, the tongue, the lips, the tip of the teeth, the tongue. Okay. No? Tip of the teeth? The tip of the teeth? What is that?
The one I heard in young Actors Theater was like BDLFMNPTVVV, and it was like you ascending a scale as you do it.
Yeah, I've never heard that.
Have you heard that one?
Yeah, I've heard that one, but I always...
Okay, I've never heard that anywhere else in my life.
Yeah,
I was wondering if the person made it up.
I've heard that one and the lips, the tip of the tongue, the teeth, the lips, the tip of the tongue, the teeth. But I did it ass backwards, so, you know. Mm-hmm. So, to my
teeth.
Immediate virtual right, he's got a very big dick. It's Rhett.
Famously.
Listenable podcast. Here we go.
Rhett. It's been 2 whole years, okay? We gotta jump people back in with the classics. We gotta play the greatest
hits.
Know
the lore.
We got new people on board. We're gonna have new people listening to this all new worldwide relaunch, which is launching in 48 other countries in 39 new languages, dude. Mm-hmm. We've really got to get people caught up, and I'm just saying, Rhett. Just big old fucking hog, man. thing is like a baby arm clutching an apple. I swear to God. How you doing, Rhett?
We're doing good.
Glad to be back.
This is nice, honestly.
It is nice, isn't it?
Sitting here. Game of the year was weird when it's just like, oh, I haven't talked to them about these at all.
Yeah, it's so weird. So now we're going to have...
Here's just this random 10 games.
Yeah. In a way, that's kind of a cool thing in its own right.
It was kind of funny, but yeah.
None of which John has played because we've diverged.
Yes.
Yeah.
So thoroughly.
But at the same time, we knew the world needed us again. The world needs a hero, Rhett. And yeah. I don't know that we're going to be that. I think we're only going to contribute to making things worse, but we'll at least be good background noise for people who want to distract themselves from everything else.
Wait, you play Utuaro Rumino.
There you go.
That's 2 out of 10. That's not bad.
And it almost didn't make the list because I'm a heartful monster.
Just a horrible, horrible monster. To my immediate virtual left, he made us wait 50 minutes so he could make tea. It's John Thayer.
It's really good. It's Lady Grey. So it's like I got my two cup. Usually it's 2 cups a day. That's like the when I want to max out. But it's 1 o'clock. It's only 1 o'clock, mm-hmm. and we're doing a podcast. So it's like let's do the extra one. And it's Lady Grey, which is kind of a softer taste. Mm-hmm. It's less caffeinated, but still gives me a little bit of that pot. So it's still podcast juice. You know,
it's less caffeinated, so you're less prone to actually just destroying another podcast.
Exactly. Yeah.
Again, we've got to hit all the bits, like even the unfunny ones. Yeah. John probably thought I was going to go with butt problems, but I'm nice and I would never do that.
Come on. That one's played out.
Exactly.
I'm so done.
Exactly. Nobody's going to laugh at that. And I, of course, I'm Polly and I am I push the boundaries of both talentless and tasteless, I guess. So welcome back, everybody. It's the SoxCast. You know us. You love us. We talk about media here. That's what we do. And we get together every couple weeks and we say things into microphones and people hear them. And I guess for the foreseeable future, this is what we're going to be doing again. So to all the people who have been with us since the beginning and are happy to see us back. Hey, welcome back to all the people who have been with us since the beginning and are sad to see us back. Sorry, man. Sorry. And to all the people who are new to the audience, welcome aboard. We hope you enjoy the show. We hope you like listening to three complete idiots talk about things that they like or don't like.
I'm really smart, so I don't really identify with that, but okay.
And we hope that you really like the mouth noises. And Rhett's dick. We hope you like all of that. There's so much. You are in for a treat, believe me. They're in for a treat. So we do that. We get together and we talk about things. So how about I do the thing where I talk about things, since that's a part of what we do here. I think that, you know, we've sat around, we've bullshitted, we got that checked off the list. What do you say we start talking about stuff? How do you feel about stuff?
Sure. I love stuff.
Big fan.
I'm big on stuff. I'm big on video games. How do you feel about video games? They're okay.
I'm a big fan.
I don't even know that Rhett can play this first one that I want to talk about because he's a vegetarian, unfortunately. The first game I'm going to talk about is called Iron Meat. So another big old run and gun Contra like released last year called Contra Operation Galuga.
Oh, yeah.
And that game was turd water. I mean, it's not even a turd. It's just you put the turd in a strainer, and then you smush it a bit, and then you put it under the water, and then you run that water through the turd, and then you catch the water on the bottom. That's what Contra Operation Galuga. It's the turd water. But Iron Meat is a Contra-like run and gunner, and... Prior to its launch, it is a game that had been in development for like 7 years by one dude.
One of those.
And I believe the only time he had any help on it was like the last year when he signed with Retrowave to publish it. It kind of like it seems like they were there and to sort of kind of help guide that thing to the end. Not really like messing with this vision too much, because this game's got a very clear vision. You look up video, you look up screenshots. This game's got a very distinct look and execution. And if you want to see how this game came together, actually, there's the publisher did a video called Iron Meat Evolution of the Game that does a really good job of covering that 7 year period. And the dude kept all of his old builds going all the way back to like 2017. So there's some really cool.
Wow.
I always love stuff like that. So, but hey, Iron Meat, what is it? It's a Contra-ass Contra game. And the obvious hook being that like everything's just real meaty and goopy. It's like excessively goopy. It's Like, it's honestly impressive how goopy
these animations are. Very good. These particles are very good.
The particles are amazing. I think the enemy designs, I love what he did with the enemy design. I've always loved, like, mixing, like, organic, like, grossness.
It's a little bit of Carrion energy.
Right?
If you played that one.
Yeah. It's like organic grossness mixed with, like, sci-fi mechanizations and shit. It's just... The game has a very cool and unique identity all its own. I think that, like, it's very clearly doing its own thing. Whereas, like, if you go look at, like, Contra Operation Galuga, that looks like sterile mobile garbage. But then you look at this game and say, like, oh, wow, this thing's
just... how you really feel.
Yeah, did you miss the turd water portion of my assessment of Contra Operation Galuga? But yeah, like, this game is just, like, I love how just squishy and goopy this game is. It's just bloody, it's big and fun and loud in all of those ways that you want a game like this to be. In terms of, like, a running, like, of just being a solid running gun, this is definitely, like, the best one I've played since Blazing Chrome. And we know I was pretty high on that one, too. Which was also another one of these made by one dude.
Oh, yeah, I played that one. I did actually play that one.
Yeah, it was
really cool.
There's something to that. One person can literally outshine, you know, an entire development team of, like, 50 people trying to make the Contra you think you remember. Yeah. Whereas the people who literally are just playing those games beside their own and be like, yep, I need to snatch this, I need to get it to feel like this, are kind of doing the better job. But this game, like, you can tell, like, the stages are very much inspired by, like, older Contra, and not like boss gauntlet Contra, but like literal run and gun through levels. Like, there's,
yeah,
it feels really good to run and gun through this game, because you can literally just run and gun through levels and it feels great. Like, you can react very quickly to the things that are happening. Like, the screen's not too smushed, it's not too zoomed out. Like, enemy pacing just feels really, like, tight and keyed in. Again, I really like the way, like, the enemies look in this game. Like, the bosses are just stupid. Like, they're incredibly... They are all incredibly... They are just the biggest... Like, I love that the final boss is just the meat.
Beautiful.
And there's great design all over this thing. Like, I think the only boring thing about the backgrounds is maybe that it takes place at night, so everything is just kind of coated in this dark blue hue. There's never a moment where it kind of, like, opens up and is really vivid. It just kind of stays in this one murky tone. So you maybe lose a little bit of that. Like I always call it, like, the Super C rhythm, where you kind of feel like you're getting deeper and deeper and deeper into the mess.
Because it starts off in the mess.
Yeah, it starts off in the mess, but you're, like, outside, you're running around, like, these human kind of places, and then the further you get into Super C, things get more and more gnarly. And I think this game just doesn't do that, and that's my only real knock against it. And I think the thing that I liked about this game a lot, that a lot of modern run and gun games miss, especially Contra Operation Buttwater, is that this game utilizes the 16:9 aspect ratio really well. And I think a lot of games miss.
I was wondering about that looking at the video.
Yeah. Like I feel like in a lot of modern run and gun games, like, if you've played any of them, like, their use of 16:9 can often feel like there's just, it's way too zoomed out and everything feels empty, or it's, like, really way too hard to kind of keep track of what's going on. And Iron Meat is just like, oh, like, it's a game that I can't explain it, because somehow it feels like it's still 4:3 because it's just zoomed in and chunky.
Yeah.
And it makes really good use of its screen real estate. And there's never a moment in this game where I feel like, oh, I didn't see that coming, or, oh, this is kind of boring because there's just nothing going on because there's too much screen for me to cover. Like, they just managed to make the pacing always feel, like, super good.
So nice. That rips.
Absolutely. I think, like, difficulty wise, it may also be a little on the easier side too, but I think that that's just because, for some weird reason, like, on normal you start with 16 lives, and on hard you get 8. And I think that that's just way too much. And I wish you could just adjust it down to three. Because getting like getting the one CC on this game was not very hard. I only failed it once. Yeah. I'm still working on hard. Like, hard mode is really hard. But, like, I do wish that I could just bring the life count down to three instead of, you know, having to, like, have, like, oh, I've got eight. Like, because you get an extra life every 20,000 points anyway.
Yeah, I was wondering if you still get extends normally.
Yeah, you get extends, but... And you get them at every 20,000 points, and there's, like, a lot of incentives for you to actually go for score in this game. Like, there's a lot of ways that you can, like, build up extra points. There are, like, these little explodey dudes that run across the ground and skitter at you really fast, and if you can blow them up, they'll drop, like, a free 1,000-point pickup. Again, that's 1/20th of an extra life. So I think, like, the scoring stuff is actually really smart because it's so well incentivized. It encourages you to play a little more risky, to go for...
Appreciate that.
Yeah, because score typically never matters in these games, I think.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever thought about the score in a Contra game.
Yeah, like, the only time I ever did was, like...
It's not on screen, right?
Like, the hit rate in the Shattered Soldier and Neo-Contra games, where those determine how far in the game you can go, but that's more just like, oh, this is how the level scripted out, and you need to hit these specific targets. But but I really like everything that Iron Meat's doing. Like, this is, like I said, it is the best run-and-gun game that I've played since Blazing Chrome, and I'm still going to be playing this one. Like, I'm still playing it a month later and still having a good time. Like, there's a lot of stuff that you can unlock, too. You can unlock, like, lots of skins, and, like, when you unlock a skin, you get, like, four parts to it, so you can, like, mix and match and create your own little weird little nightmare dude, so you get, like, you can get, like, arms, a head, a body, and legs, so you get, like, all four parts, and you can just, like, mix and match and create your own little nightmare dude. It's pretty cool.
Awesome.
It's 9 stages. I don't think that it's one of those games where it outstays its welcome. I think that that's another problem with a lot of modern running gunners. I think the stages just drone on way too long. But this game has a really good pace to it. The bosses are great. Like, everything, it just feels really satisfying to play. Like, just
did the overall arc feel a little bit stronger to you than Blazing Chrome? Because that one I remember feeling a little bit.
I think Blazing Chrome petered out at the end a little bit.
Yeah, I feel that was
this
my
game
issue with it.
Absolutely hits a real good escalation at the end where it was like, yeah, like, now we're fighting a final damn boss. Let's go.
good.
Yeah. So, yeah, you want some goopy Contra in your life. this game's got it. Oh, this game's got it all. It's just got such a fun, unique identity, and it nothing else is doing what it's doing in that sector. So,
killer.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
Like that game a lot. Cool. And the other thing I played is a visual novel. We got visual novels on tap. Can you believe it?
Me, I can't believe you played a visual novel.
Me of all people. It's amazing. But so the visual novel I played was named Of the Devil, Episode 1. Mm-hmm. And this is like the latest and the first paid entry of an episodic visual novel. So I know John's just absolutely rushing to steam right now. Needs that episodic goodness, that he needs to live on the edge of his seat, not knowing if the thing that you like a whole lot will ever get finished.
Oh man.
I have faith in these people, though. They are really dedicated to knocking things out. But this is by Nth Circle, and this is a cyberpunk themed story taking place in the year 2086, and it focuses on I would call her like a pretty sharp-tongued and straightforward defense attorney named Morgan. And she's got like this flair for gambling. Like, her whole like outfit and everything is very much like based on like what you would see in a casino. The gambling stuff really just seeps through in every aspect of the game. It's immediately eye-catching and very cool. I played Episode 0 last year and I loved it to bits. I didn't shut up about it for a year, which is funny.
Yeah,
I don't think that I even talked about it on Game of the Year at all, did I?
I don't think so.
Damn.
It's an Episode 0. I get it.
Yeah, it's a demo. But then again, some people put demo as their Game of the Year. I don't know what was happening with me. Look, like, the end of last year was rough, okay? So, a large part of why I was pulled in, it's not only like the story that they tell in episode zero is just really, really good and well done. And it's a very good jumping in point for the world, I think. But there's a very cool hook that happens in this prologue. Rhett just played this last night, so Rhett knows.
When you said you were going to spoil this, I just went, fuck it, I'm playing it.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it for people at home, don't worry, but I've already told John that I'm going to tell him what the big thing is. But you people at home will not hear what I am about to say.
Okay.
So
I'm listening now. It's so, just us, right?
Yes. It's okay. Just me and you. So, the end of episode zero.
It's a spoiler song. You can sing along, but not for very long. Not for very long.
So, now you can see why I might be a little hooked with what they got going on, right? Right.
Pretty choice.
Having played episode zero, I'm like, okay, so where do they go from here, huh?
It's real good. I'm like, how do you solve this? What do you do with this? And it's like, we know that there's going to be 5 paid episodes. So they've got some time to work with it here.
It's an Ace Attorney game.
It's an Ace Attorney game, kind of. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really does work on that. I mean, this game is very much inspired by, like, Danganronpa, Phoenix Wright, and...
You can tell.
And I, the Somnium Files. Like, it really mines... It wears those on its sleeve. So to get to where I was talking about, episode one takes place about a month after episode zero and ends up in a case where Morgan gets pulled into the world of corporate espionage when the father of modern android technology, who also just happens to be a close friend of hers, ends up getting murdered. And which also then puts her in possession of this highly advanced android girl that he was working on. Because, you know, you got to have a buddy. You got to have a buddy in these games.
Beautiful. So
Morgan gets her buddy in this game, Sarah. And Sarah is an absolute cutie pie, cupcake, cinnamon roll. Want to grab her. Just give her the biggest hug. She's so good.
So speaking of cyberpunk visual novels with robot girls, does she not talk like Dorothy?
She kind of does, and it would not shock me at all.
They're besties.
Yeah. It's real good. So episode one, I think, in terms of like its content and its pacing and what it's doing, I feel like this is more the world building episode. And they do a really good job of setting everything up and making this world of like mega corporations running everything feel like really palpable and real and as suffocating as that sounds. And I feel like maybe they kind of like had a test run at this, because they released a game called Model Employee a couple of years ago during the game jam thing. And it's kind of like, it's a free game that you can play right now, by the way.
Damn it, I forgot that this was the same dev. I just took that off the wish list. This is one of those games I keep cycling on and off, because I'm like, it's been like 2 years and I still haven't played this. Oh, let's take it off. And then somebody reminds me of it. I'm like, oh, I do want to play that. Throw it back on.
Model Employee is really good. Model Employee is fantastic.
I did the same thing with Butterfly Soup for 5 years.
Well, Butterfly Soup is great. Butterfly Soup is that one where it's just like, oh, everybody praising it to hell. It's not that good.
There's no way.
It can't be that. Oops. It's all good.
Ah, shit.
I can't believe I got Rhett to read a visual novel. I'm just now realizing that and reeling from it. Shit, there's hope.
I got Rhett to read a visual novel last year.
Oh shit, there's hope.
You got me to play a strategy game.
Okay, that's a good point. You did play Sayano Uta as well.
Damn, Rhett, Vienna.
Look at you.
I'm not completely opposed to Vienna. I play JRPGs. They're like siblings.
JRPGs are like worse VNs. You know, all this bullshit in between the good parts. Completely a joke.
Completely.
Oh, I can elaborate later.
Yeah, you're literally playing a JRPG right now.
Yeah.
Maybe more than one.
I think we all are, aren't we? Like, I'm playing Mario and Luigi Brothership, and you're playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and John?
I'm playing two of them. Well, yeah.
All right. But anyway.
Elaborate.
But, what I like about this story is that, like, it does a really good job of being, like, this procedural, like, I'm getting to the bottom of this, like... And with the type of character Morgan is, it's very interesting kind of getting a look at her as just like, oh, like, this is somebody she cares about. This is somebody she cared about that got killed. And she's like trying to keep this stone face about it all. And that, like, they do a really good job of kind of showing a little more of her as a character in this one. They're very clearly like breadcrumbing things out of her. And this episode has a lot of real key moments that feel really good when you kind of like see these little chinks in this armor, this veneer she puts on for the world. It's really, really good. But for me, like, everything about this game just works. Like, the writing and the dialogue, like, I think even Rhett could, you know, get this from episode zero. Like, it's really dense and procedural, but it's also just really full of wit and charm. And I legitimately love every single character in the game so far. I think they're all just, like I can't, like, say, oh, that's the worst character. It's like, no, they're all really good in their own ways. Even, like the authority-loving, boot-licking detective girls. I just want to grab her stupid cheeks. Oh, you're so fashy, but you're cute as shit.
One thing really shook me, though. How old is the grizzled detective supposed to be?
My God!
Because he looks like 26, maybe.
He's 26 or 27, but I know they're trying to play him up as like his 40s or something. I don't think they've ever listed official ages, but they've just assured us.
Yeah, I looked in the bio and I'm like, oh, that would be too easy.
They've just assured us that, yes, they have in-universe ages. the investigation stuff is fun. The world building and like the actual courtroom stuff that you get to do in episode one feels really good. Like, it's very much a combination of Ace Attorney Danganronpa stuff, but like all fleshed out with this gambling thing where you're like, you're playing cards, you're anteing up to raise the stakes to get more chips by the end, and it's just all tied to this little store where you can buy some charms for your phone and stuff. It's just a very solid, like, they know what this game is. It's very much like, you know, it couldn't be tighter. Like, it couldn't be more locked down. And I think that, like, if you ask anybody, like both episodes are just literally like the most poly shit you can imagine. Like, I have to imagine.
That's awesome.
Like, while playing this, if I had told you, oh yeah, by the way, I directed this, people would be like, I could see that. Like, and
killer.
I'm just endlessly excited for what else they're gonna do. Like, they've got such a cool premise on their hands. And they set it up so cool at the end of episode one, where Sarah and Morgan are kind of talking and like, you know, but she doesn't. And it's just like, there's an interesting thing going on here that, like, I cannot wait to see how they explore this and play with it more. I know that they plan to have episode two out this year. So I'm at least hoping for like another big boost of this good energy before the end of the year. I need more of it in my veins.
Fuck yeah.
But it may be a slow burn until all five are out.
Oh, it's going to be. I don't look for this thing to be finished until like 2027. But it
will be finished before Deltarune.
Yeah. Unsurprisingly. If you want to get in on the Of the Devil fun, you can download the game for free. It's a game where you download the game and you get episode zero for free, and then you start paying when you get to episode one, which is $10. I streamed it, so obviously I'm reading out loud and that's taking longer, but if I had to put an estimate on it, it took me like 10 plus hours to finish episode one.
God damn. I was surprised how many streams it took you. I'm like, oh, this is beefier than
expected. Dude, I thought it was going to be like, they said it was going to be like 2 to 3 times the size of episode one or episode zero. And it's like, no, this is like 5 times the size of episode zero.
OELVNs are usually like on the shorter end in my, like in my experience, yeah. like sometimes to the point where they feel kind of truncated, like yeah. original yeah. butterfly
suit. It feels like they've kind of maybe rushed the endings a little bit, but no, like this, they, this is a game that luxuriates in everything. Like you, there are a lot of ways for you to kind of take in and enjoy the world through reading data pads and reading articles and stuff. And, they did a real good job here. They did a real good job here. Like of everything that I am excited for, like this, just top of the list. I love this thing so much. Of the devil, absolutely poly approved.
Thanks for sharing that one.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk about this next one, but I do want to just mention it, and then I'll pass the microphone. But I did start the year by playing Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore.
Oh, it looks so cute.
And this is an original game by that dude that remade the CDI Zelda games. You know this game.
Oh.
And
this looks really cute.
This is a game in that style, and it's absolutely not just a meme game. I promise you. Mm-hmm. I feel like this game gets saddled with that a lot of like, oh, it's mm-hmm. a meme game, haha. But no, it's like a legitimately fun and cozy little adventure platformer that's legitimately fun and funny, and I had a really good time with it.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
All right. So that's all.
Things are good.
That's all that I got up to. I think I got started mm-hmm. off with. I think the year started off pretty damn good here in Polyland. What about John Thayer World? How are things over there?
I've got some good ones too.
Ooh, you got that good good? You got that good good?
I've got that good good. I guess like we kind of alluded to it there. I'm trying to like get in. I'm kind of figuring out my like sweet spot zone. Like I'm playing RPGs from. From the beginning, dawn of time to now, and having fun. But
from the dawn of East.
From the dawn of East. No, well before the dawn of East. And it's and having a good time. But there is like a sweet spot. I have to be in a specific mood for different games. And there's things that irk me in either one. Mm-hmm. This isn't my segment, but I'm playing Tales of Berseria now and having a really good time with the story and the characters. I'm liking it a lot more than I did Vesperia. Mm-hmm. There's so much extra systems gunk.
Oh, God, it's real. Yeah. If there's anything that I don't like about Tales of Berseria, it's the RPG part of it.
It's playing it.
Unfortunately, man. Look, I'm just going to press the devour button as much as I can in battle and hope that that's good enough.
Ooh, I played it on hard for like 20 hours thinking that would make it, better. No, it just makes everything way tankier.
Yeah.
Great.
I don't remember what difficulty I played on. It may have been hard. It may not have been. I truly don't remember. But yeah. Ooh. I just wish those games played more like straight action games.
Yeah. Instead of like bad RPG action game where you're expected to eat damage and
yeah. Like there's a couple moments where you're fighting characters one-on-one and it's like, okay, I can kind of see what you're doing here. I can almost, because you can do the parries, you can kill enemies and get the points for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second like all your party members are in there, it just turns into a clusterfuck. Yeah. So it's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
So that's like obnoxious. It's too long. There's too much bullshit. Mm-hmm. There's too much. There's a jewel that I like in the center there, and it's just like covered in stuff. I'm also playing the original Megami Tensei, but the Super Famicom version. And so that's an 80s RPG, and it's very, and I'm really enjoying it. It's got a very strong like arc, like moment to moment. I beat the Minotaur. I've got wrecked by Medusa. but it's very bare.
Yeah. It's really dry.
It's there's like, so for the size of the mazes, there's so little stuff that happens in the mazes. And I kind of picked up Ultima 4 for a little bit, because I've tried that game like six times and I was like, this is it. I'm going to do it. And I just wasn't the right time again.
One day.
So there's the modern RPGs, you know, the contemporary ones that just came out, like Tales of Berseria. Mm-hmm. And then there's the really, really old crusty stuff. That's kind of, there's so, like, this isn't true as true for Ultima 4, but for Megami Tensei especially, there's so, it's like you want to just, it's just, you're going to enjoy walking around a maze. Walk around a maze for its own sake.
Hey, do the maze thing here.
Yeah, when I played Romantic Saga last year, it was the same thing where it's like, hey, here's a dungeon. Live in here for an hour. Like, you don't need anything else, right?
Nah.
That's the primordial joy of playing an RPG is reward enough, isn't it?
You got numbers. You have a maze to be in.
Mm-hmm.
What more do you really want?
What more do you need? Now, I like that more than Berseria. What Berseria's doing. I'd rather, on a philosophical, personal level. But sometimes if there's one thing that just hits like a... Sometimes there are games that just hit that exact sweet spot for me. Mm-hmm. Where it's just like Goldilocks, perfect, right down the middle, just hits so good.
And they were made in the 90s.
And they were every RPG made in the 1990s, the best decade.
The best decade for RPGs.
Period, yes.
But go back to the 80s, little too crusty. 2000s, way
not
too
crusty
many
enough.
Way too many systems. 90s, just right.
90s, just right. And because they won't have a fucking mini map in the corner telling you where to go at all times. Like, oh, there's where you want to go. If you want to keep doing the story, just walk straight there. Don't worry, you can walk around the enemies. It doesn't actually matter. Like, oh, here's several novels worth of incidental character text that's read out to you. Nah, 90s, just right. Just the right amount of story. Just the right game length. Universally true, every single game. But the one I particularly played was Lunar Silver Star Story.
Yeah.
Did I say Silver Star?
Still, everybody
Silver
does it.
Star Story.
I don't think there's anybody on the planet I've heard say that game that has not fucked it up.
Silver Star Story.
Yeah, Silver Star Story. CDBDBD Drive.
Yeah. And I played it on, okay, so there's background. I played this on my phone with the iOS version, which only ported Lunar Silver Star. There's no Eternal Blue. No. It lets you set the graphics to, it's based on the PS1 version. Mm-hmm. You can set the graphics to either have the, you know, the smoothing filter or just be crusty and original.
Chunky.
Uh-huh. You can, there's battle speed options for both map and in battle that don't mess with the music. You can set it to either the original Japanese or the US difficulty. You can play with the US dub or the Japanese dub. It's essentially an ideal way to play Lunar Silver Star Story.
It sounds like, because it sounds like, it sounds like the remakes are actually nixing the difficulty stuff. So yeah, the iOS version of Lunar 1 may actually be the,
seriously?
It may actually be the definitive version, unfortunately.
Well, no. The remakes, are they sticking with the JP difficulty or the US difficulty?
It sounds like they'll probably go with the JP difficulty. I'm just hearing that there is no difficulty option.
Okay. All right.
Which one is harder?
The US.
US.
Working
US
Designs got in there, and anytime they got a game, they look, we need to do something to make it ours. Make the numbers bigger and make it more annoying. Make Borgen impossible to beat.
Let's do everything to make it ours. Let's include a making of documentary where we almost exclusively talk about our contributions.
Our contributions, yeah.
Let's erase the dev credits at the start and replace them with our logo.
Yeah. It's real rough.
All right, look. Let's put that aside.
Sure.
I don't give a shit about playing the US typically because I didn't grow up with it. So to me, I'm just like, oh,
whatever. It's a video game.
Put that away. Mm-hmm. So that makes me happy because then I can still get a good, really solid version of Eternal Blue.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'll probably play the PS1 version with the unworked patch and just accept that. And just, you know, play it when I'm okay playing with the original battle speed. This is a 90s JRPG. It's based on a 1992 Sega CD game, and then the PS1 version fleshes out a bunch. I got to watch Cecile finish her like 80% done save file for the Sega CD version after I finished mine, so I got a big blast of how that one plays and looks. It was really nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is like, I talked about Tales of Phantasia, the Gaudi cast, but I think that this is sort of a similar thing where it's like the one of the anime RPG progenitors. Like,
Oh, yeah.
We've got a JP dub where the voice actors are really important. Mm-hmm. We have voice acting.
Yeah.
We have anime cutscenes. We have, there's an increased focus on characterization and making you really fall in love with this cast. Mm-hmm. It's pretty linear. It's very linear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's
Yeah. It is line linear, even more so than the Sega CD version, I think, because they wanted to cut it into two discs, and on the second disc, they don't want you to have access to the world map.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think in the Sega CD version, you can go to the frontier and then come back.
Yeah.
And then this PS1 version is like, oh, no.
No,
oh, wow. you're here now. No.
You're in the frontier now.
It's like a port of Final Fantasy IV where you get to the moon and then you can't,
go back.
So it's very linear. It has chunky dungeons. They're very satisfying. They're beefy, honest mazes, basically. Mm-hmm. With cool boss fights. It's the stuff that Tails would be. It's the stuff that Trails would be.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of story focus. The big mechanical moments are just like, we have big mazy dungeons and then cool boss fights. Yeah. It's not, you're exploring a big world with tons of stuff in it. You're experiencing a story. Xenogears, I think shares a lot with it too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like this Grandia, this Grandia and Xenogears are all just like that. That is like a trinity for me of games where like, oh, this is a specific point in flavor. Time. There is a flavor here. Yeah, that is absolutely.
Because I'm like a lot of people. I grew up playing Final Fantasy and Square games and thought that was what RPGs were. But there's this whole parallel lineage of specifically anime RPGs.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And it turned into like some of my favorite games ever. I want to go back for a little bit further, do more of the Sega CD, TurboGrafx CD stuff, since I think that lineage is shared there. Obviously, we can't play all of the Legend of Heroes games in between 1 and Trails yet. I'm really excited for that Geofront port of translation of 3. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited for that Geofront White Witch translation. But that's all Lunar is. That's what Lunar is. And I think for me, the big thing that makes it work is that there's a really nice romance that's just like the beating heart of it. They do a lot to set it up at the start. They expand on it a lot from the Sega CD version.
Oh God, yeah. Like the
man.
The ways
that game made.
The way that PS version just gets fleshed out. Like, cause I had played I played the Sega CD version like 2 years before. And so when I got my hands on like, it was just like, it's almost like that moment when I turned on Final Fantasy VII Remake for the first time and got punched in the chest. That was sort of like my first experience with that, was playing Lunar Silver Star Story complete on the PlayStation.
Like, oh, you can do this?
Yeah.
It's just so pretty. The Sega CD version is gorgeous, of course. Yeah, like, I love
it. It's great. Yeah.
Because they're programmed CGs, like they display graphics and animate them lightly programmatically, and then they're in the PS1 version, they replace that with
actual
FMV anime FMVs.
My first experience with Lunar was somebody bringing their Sega CD to my 12th or 13th birthday party. I can't remember which it was. They brought it and then they threw in Lunar, and it was like, I literally knew exactly what I needed that minute. Like when I saw like the first time I saw like a cutscene that was like, it's not anime, but
the colors are so vivid.
But it's still just like, this looks like anime, even though it's just sprites, big sprites moving on a window and like voice acting. It's like, what are video games now? How is this? What is going on?
Video games can have Castle in the Sky energy.
Yeah,
you don't get that in Final Fantasy VII.
I know what you're talking about, how like they would just do a full screen and like maybe only animate the lips.
Yeah, yeah.
But in my memory, I remember it as just, this is anime. This is my first experience with actual anime.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the purest form of like game reward is beat dungeon, get anime cutscene.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Delectable.
There must be a few fully animated CGs or
no
FMVs in the Sega CD. There's
not
in
the Sega CD. No, they're all done.
Even like the big turn isn't.
I'm pretty sure they're all programmatically done with sprites.
That's
and
crazy.
Stuff.
Yeah, maybe I might be thinking more of Eternal Blue.
I don't know. I mean, they might animate it. It's just that it's done.
It's just done,
you know, the same way they do it on the Super. Same way they do it on the Super Nintendo or something.
Yeah. Like those Valis cutscenes they did on the Sega Genesis.
True. God, Valis is cool.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just The romance is so nice. Oh, Luna sings a big Disney I want some over image of the moon.
God, it's beautiful. So good. It's so good.
She's so pining and a little bit jealous and a little bit pathetic.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
It's fantastic. The boat song is peak fiction, man.
Okay, yeah, I'm like, Luna's boat song got turned into a meme in like 2000.
Yeah,
really?
Oh, somebody like sped it up 400%, so it's like and like put it over Nyan Cat or something.
Yeah, very silly.
So it's like a chipmunk version.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's really funny because like the romance was my favorite part of Xenogears, and it does feel like there's specific moments and aspects in this that are just in Xenogears.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, I didn't realize that my favorite part of somebody took my favorite part of Xenogears and just made it its own game without all the extra shit. What's his name?
And it's Reno? Actually weird because like the Sega CD version wasn't as fleshed out.
That's true. But also, the PS1 version still preceded Xenogears. God. But so I just really like the romance. I really like all the characters. They get build like a nice little core cast. It's a very low key intro. Like they spend 7 or 8 hours before introducing the main conflict where you're just going walking around like doop doo, everything, this is such a pretty nice world and everything's great, love all these characters. These characters love each other, they're doing their best. Oh, Nash is kind of a shithead in a cute in a funny way. But I was just endeared to everybody. The drunk shithead,
Kyle is great.
Kyle's great.
Jessica's amazing.
Jessica's great. Mia's great. All the girls are great.
Best girls. Just absolute, peak girls.
Girls. But guess what? They didn't need 3 novels worth of text to get me familiar with them. They're broad, simple archetypes, and that's fine.
Wow, they're broads?
They're broads. Ah. They're broads. All of them. This game here's got broads. Quote John Thayer. Put it on the back of the box. You fucking jackass.
I think I finished in like 20 hours, 21 hours. That was with the 2x battle speed. Nice. So the full thing is probably 25, 26 hours. But yeah, it's actually not that much to talk about because it's almost like it just all works. It all just comes together.
I don't know how I would talk about this game to people other than it's just like, dude, I just think it's one of those rare cases of a perfect RPG like Phantasy Star 4 or Chrono Trigger. I put that game on that level. Like, that is where Lunar Silver Star and Eternal Blue go for me.
Killer. I mean, it's just, yeah, I played Phantasy Star 4 a little while ago, and I was also like, oh, yep, you just nailed it. The climax is fucking amazing.
Oh, God, yeah.
The fake outs, the fake out final dungeons and bosses.
Yeah,
are so good. Choice.
Yeah.
Oh, it goes so
got
hard.
Us again,
oh, it goes
damn
so
it.
Hard. Like they spend like probably seven. It feels like they spend like 7 or 8 hours in climax mode, like end of the final trails, final chapter.
Yeah.
Mode. So yeah, it's fun. It's been fun moving backwards from Trails into like these other similar kind of vibes from the 90s and really falling in love with them. And I love 80s RPGs, and I'm okay with contemporary RPGs, I guess, sometimes. Like
I
once
don't know.
A
year. It sounds like you're falling further and further out of
life. Like once a year. I can handle one once a year.
It's like
Xenoblade 2 is distant in the future. Far in the future.
It's like when I make Butterfinger cake, it's the most rich, dense, like this is bad, and if I eat this more than once a year, I'm going to be a diabetic. That is the same with John and contemporary RPGs.
Well, it's like that, but the cake is mixed in with like rocks.
Yeah.
Cause it's not actually all the way pleasant either.
Not always. I mean, if I was playing Xenoblade 2, I would not, that would be all rocks. My bowl would just be all rocks.
We're at like peak Berseria. Like we just had the best scene probably in the game. We're heading into the end game, and I still had a moment where I turned to Cecile, like, I think if I tried to play Cold Steel, it would kill me. I would die.
I feel like Cold Steel is John Poison, but I'd still be here for the reactions.
I just realized
Cold Steel 1, yes. Cold Steel 2, no.
I don't know, Red. I read a review that was like, it was somebody that also kind of was lukewarm on Azure in like exactly the ways I was. And they were describing like, oh yeah, Cold Steel 2 is even worse about all of that. I was like, oh man.
I just want to slam my fist on the table and spoil one thing, but I won't.
I'm sorry. So that's Cold Steel 1 and 2 are still on my I still want to play.
I have no hope. You may have hope, I don't.
I still want to play them. It's just kind of like, it's, you know, it's like a few other games. Like, I really want to play Star Ocean 2.
You gotta know what you're going into. For me, it's a similar thing where I'm not playing Trails Through Daybreak yet because I know what I'm going into and I don't want to go into it just despising that. I want to go into it where that's the thing that I'm ready for. So if I can go into it with at least a positive attitude, maybe if it does disappoint me, it won't be as bad.
Yeah, like I feel like there's a version of me that can get in the mood for what those games are doing, and I can at least see through to Cold Steel 2 and get a vibe for what those games are doing.
That first chapter, Cold Steel, is real rough.
For me, it was like that whole 90% of Cold Steel 1 was a little rough.
Yeah.
It's like having an entire game of world building for the setup of 2.
Well, I mean, honestly, I was pretty on board for all of Zero. It's just that when I got to Azure, the payoffs weren't actually that great. So I was like, that's when I got mad.
The podcast is over.
There's one great payoff in Azure. Everything else is kind of mid.
What are you guys talking about?
Oh fuck! Am I twisting the narrative here? Because even Polly's kind of being lured to the dark side a little bit.
The
things that I dislike about current Trails are seated in Azure. So I've had a lot of time to rethink that game as a whole. I like the one big thing is like, oh, that's fucking good. That's incredible. Then there's like a bunch of other stuff where it's like, no, that's terrible. And you are why we're where we're at now.
Head empty, never reevaluate. I do agree there are trends that started there that got a little excessive by Cold Steel 4. Or Daybreak, where it's like, please stop doing it the same way for the fifth time in a row.
Oh, God. People are coming from off screen to save the characters from after a hopeless boss fight. That'll be fun. All right, there is one big elephant in the room that we do need to talk about a little bit with Lunar before we move on. We're almost done, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And who's your favorite girl?
Oh, my God, man. I think it's always been Jessica. I love the spunk. The spunk is just, she's great. Yeah,
I want to marry Luna.
Oh, who doesn't? Man, we'll not spoil it, but I'll just say, you know what I'm going to say, and you know what I'm thinking.
I know exactly what you're going to say. You're saying there's a certain outfit she puts on later in the game. Yeah, I get it.
There's a certain thing. Yeah. Rhett!
Lucia from the second one, sorry.
Yeah.
I want to play Lunar 2 so bad. I'm going to get that remaster.
Lucia's real good.
As long as it doesn't have the Euros difficulty, I'm going to get that remaster. So the other big thing is probably the Working Designs translation. It's really funny because it actually felt like anytime it came up in like the chat, in our group DM or on the chat, you kind of like dipped out. Like, I feel like you're sick of this conversation.
I kind of like, dude, it is what it is. Like, those games were never going to see any other localization at that time. So we are lucky to have gotten them. I'm not saying be grateful you got them. I'm just saying, dude, I've heard it so many times. I can't anymore. It's like the same where it's on the same level of me and idiots who insist that Shion and Cosmos are like a romantic couple. I put it on that same level of you need to shut up because everything coming out of your mouth is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. And you make me want to shoot myself.
I still don't even know which the iPhone is using, if they smooth
it out. I don't even know. Every screenshot I've seen from the PSX version where somebody's like, look at this goofy bit from Working Design Script, I saw that in the iOS version. Cutting Room Floor says it's based on the PSP version, which is based on the Working Design translation.
Yeah, like you're going to get an amalgamation, because I think that if there's anything that people liked about Lunar is that the script was quirky. There was there was a lightheartedness to that script that made that work. I'm not saying you go Samurai Pizza Cats it and just completely make up a damn script without ever translating anything, but I do think that what they added to that game was valuable. I think that it helped, like, that is a game that reads to me that could come off very, very dry. And I've played very, very dry versions of Lunar. I played the Game Boy Advance version that was translated by Ubisoft. It's real, real dry, real, real literal, and real, real bad.
That's, I feel like there's a middle ground here. Maybe an Xseed or somebody could have come at it. Because here was my immediate impression. Because part of why I jumped into the game was because I was sick of hearing like back and forth about this and not having any context for myself. Yeah, I was like, I'm done. I just want to form my own take here. Mm. And my experience was like the big, like, I felt like the conversational tone of it hit in like a more natural and organic way than almost like any other translations I've played from that time.
Yeah.
Like, it's certainly like, in that way, it feels like it presages stuff like Xseed's translations of the Trails games and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The big moments all landed great for me.
Yeah.
I never felt like the big moments were compromised by the translation.
Yeah.
I didn't get anything out of the goofy pop culture jokes. I could have left those.
They're dated as hell. Like, when you have Bill Clinton jokes in your game, like, dude, that is not gonna work 30 years later. I'm sorry.
I think a lot of that stuff, though, one, is in the second game, and two, it's like random NPCs and not part of
it's mostly random NPCs. Thing. Yeah. Like there is one where they had, like, they're very clear at all reference in the original script, and it just gets changed to this dumb Bill Clinton joke or some shit.
There's a lot of made up.
That's rough.
There's a lot of made up shit.
Yeah.
If I could, my idea would have been something like the Tales of Fantasia's fan patch I played a while ago, or something like an Xseed script.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what we got. And I don't think, like, if you can play Final Fantasy VII in its original form, I don't think that's any less compromised.
Sure.
Every like extra outside the game bit I've read from Vic Ireland and people like that comes across as fucking insufferable.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
They seem like they wanted to make these games their own.
Yeah,
and
yeah, it's terrible. I can't listen to Victor Ireland, man. I cannot. And I'm not even that person that is like that dogs Working Designs. I just have a specific hate for hearing Victor Ireland talk about anything.
I had a very specific reverence for Working Designs as a kid, because they were the ones bringing over these anime games.
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw an ad that was specifically like, we are not doing a second printing of Lunar, so buy it now. It's the coolest game ever, and if you're cool, you're gonna have played it. And we pretty much wanted to stay underground and cool, so so it's like, oh, cool, limited run.
Yeah,
predecessors.
Limited run, yeah.
Panzer Dragon Saga printed like 10,000 copies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah.
But it's not bad that they did that. It's bad that they bragged about it.
Yeah,
right.
Buy it now, because there's not going to be any more.
There's a print ad for Panzer Dragon Saga that's like a picture of the main character's face with like scissor lines to cut it out. So it was like, if you can't get a copy, here's a way to play as this character.
Yeah.
So Sega also kind of
knew
on some bullshit.
So, you know, it is what it is. I think the games are perfectly playable. Mm-hmm. Again, like, I thought the difficulty, it was a nice gentle romp where the bosses, where I could get through the dungeons, usually I'm generally in like one or two like dives, and then the bosses were like nicely challenging. Yeah. I got to like, they would push me to my just up to the edge where I started to get really uncomfortable and think I'm gonna run out of resources, and then I just barely beat them and I didn't have to grind.
Japanese difficulty,
yeah.
the Saturn original difficulty. And that felt great to me. That felt right for this story. So that's my take. I read you talk about Lunar probably 15 years ago, and I'm glad I finally got to play it. And it turns out fucking rules.
Yeah, man, Lunar is just one of those, like, that is embedded in my soul. Those games mean a whole hell of a lot to me, so I could not be happier that I will be replaying them this year.
Fuck yeah.
I don't even care if, like, the difficulty or whatever. So, dude, I just want to play and enjoy that world and those characters and that game again, because I just love those games to bits.
I really want to play Grandia too. Grandia as well.
Oh, Grandia 1 and 2 are both so good.
I played 2 in high school, and I played it in like 4 days, and I remember being happy the whole time, and I don't remember any of it. I want to play Grandia 1, and then we'll see, and then maybe I can do a 2 replay down the line. All right, I think I'm running over. Any other thoughts before we throw it at?
Play Lunar! It's coming out sometime in April, I believe.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of different versions of it.
Yeah, once again, I jumped right in immediately before I didn't realize there's a remaster coming out. Like, all right. Rhett.
Hi. Oh, God. I'm on the spot. Okay, start the clock. So we're talking about contemporary RPGs.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about John Poison, I hear.
I have come to accept my fate that I think this is going to be the year of the contemporary RPG for me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've kind of noticed that trend already, and it's kind of been shocking.
It's only February. I'm on the second one. Yeah. Like, because I'm looking at the backlog, too, going, I mean, I'm not going to mangle that name again. Never mind. Is Mask of Deception?
I'm so excited. Yeah, I'm very excited. I'm very sorry that you're going to play the Uta Warurumino sequels before me. Again, I mean, just like when I played like 4 Trails games, and then you completely caught up and then went way ahead of me.
It's not set in stone yet, because then I bought another game and I'm like, oh boy, my backlog's looking pretty dire right now.
Yeah, but
sorry,
the Uta sequels are going to be like the really good ones, though. Have you seen the cute twins?
Oh yeah, the twins I know about.
Oh, they're very good.
The Obviously twins, which made me good. Go, so there was no porn in the original version of the second game.
You could hear all of the happiness leaving his body with every syllable of that phrase of that sentence.
Because the funny thing about the first game is that the original had a bunch of silly, I guess, hentai scenes included.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just like kind of basic. Like I watched a few, and they're like, they're fine. They obviously weren't the main focus of the.
Yeah, I just looked up the CGs and was like, oh, this feels awkward. Especially like some of the goofier characters, like, I don't know about this. I mean, again,
what's her name again?
She's, yeah, you Toka. Know exactly who I'm.
This. Toka's the best. Toka. I think I did read that scene with Cecile, and it was just like slapstick. She's like fucking it up the whole time. It's really funny.
Slapstick sex, that's real good. Yes. I'm into it. Let's
go. The only way it makes sense for her.
Absolutely.
She's the character that, like, when a bridge falls, she does coyote time for like 30 seconds.
She looks down and then realizes the bridge has fallen, and then she falls. I think there's like dialogue.
Yeah, it's like she doesn't fall until she realizes that the bridge fell like a minute later.
She's like the self-serious paladin. I love Uta. I'm here for a year of RPG, Rhett.
But first, last year I played a game, Like a Dragon Gaiden, the man who erased his name, to be further. This is Yakuza 7 and a half.
You made that one up.
I did not make that one up.
I've never heard of this one.
This is the Kiryu spinoff that takes place between 7 and 8. So 7 is the big JRPG one that introduced the main new character. And then they realized, apparently after making 8, that they needed a bridge game and made this pretty quickly, because that's how that studio rolls.
Fuck yeah.
I actually read somewhere that this game was written afterwards, even though it ended up coming out. It came out first.
So choice.
So this is a beat 'em up with Kiryu, and it's the first one since like the series director left.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I think the tone of these games is starting to get a little too silly. Like, it's a game that a lot of it takes place on like this massive, massive resort casino boat. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, and the police can't touch it. And it's just, it pushes the absurdity higher than they usually go. And I'm just like, I thought the writing team was kind of like, you know, they're losing their touch here.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. the reason I'm bringing this game up is because I finished it and it was good. It didn't make my game of the year list. And I was like, yeah, this was a solid adventure. Didn't make me cry or anything, though. And then there's the final scene, which is like probably the only thing they actually cared about as far as setting up 8 is there's was one scene with Kiryu where not literally, to be clear, not literally, they stab you with a knife and then twist it for like 5 minutes. Kiryu's sobbing. I'm sobbing. I'm like, game, I forgive you for everything for saying you aww. Didn't have it in you anymore.
You hear the neighbors sobbing. Everybody's just sobbing.
I'm just like, oh, okay. Oh, this is the energy we're going to 8 now with, huh?
Fuck yeah.
So starting late December, I played Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
Mm.
And this is Yakuza 8 to be referred to in the future.
Because the 8 is an infinity the 8, symbol.
The infinity symbol on its side, yeah.
Look at that. Big brain.
It's pretty clever. So this is the second like full-on JRPG they've done. And this time, you play as Ichiban from 7. And later in the game, Kiryu joins you as a party member.
Okay.
So that's fun.
That's good. Everybody loves Kiryu.
Everybody loves Kiryu, and they I feel like Yakuza 6 was originally like going to be his last game, like the end of that saga.
They can't get rid of him. They can't. You cannot do Yakuza without him.
I think this game is the actual farewell to Kiryu.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
Cuz like this is kind of like the main thing I actually want to talk about with this is that like This is a very long game. You go to Hawaii, and then some characters go back to Japan, and you realize, oh, they're doing that, huh? There's two separate parties. Oh,
yeah. All right.
So it's like it happens like a third of the way through the game, and you realize like, oh, okay, this game's like 30% longer than I thought it was going to be.
Ooh.
Because now for the last like several chapters, you play one chapter with one team, and then you go across the ocean and play one chapter with the other team, and like the levels are not like syncing, so it's like, you know, one team will be like level 20 to 25 for one chapter, and then you go and do that again, level 20 to 25 with the other team. So it's like it makes the game like even slower than it already was.
I feel like that would make it feel like a slog in a way.
It kind of because
I played Mary Skelter Finale last year, and like you control three groups in that game, but they're all controlled in tandem at the same time. Mm. So everybody's leveling up at like relatively similar pace. But if you feel like you're doing 21 to 25 and then you're doing it again, it could feel like maybe you're not making progress just because of the way the brain works with numbers sometimes.
Mm. Yeah, it is definitely that where it's like, okay, like we're taking our time here. But the main thing is that the second team in Japan is it's led by Kiryu, mm-hmm. and they go all out with like references to the other games because you unlock,
which is great for you when you've played all of them,
which is great for me when I played all of them. I'm like, oh my god, I said this is the Cold Steel 4 of Yakuza games because like there's like a 10 part side quest where you like meet up with characters from the past games and they just bring out like all the major characters who haven't appeared. Like there's a girl that hasn't appeared since 2 and she's back.
This is literally fan service.
Fuck out of this. Like characters that haven't appeared since 3 and stuff. It's just like characters from 6 that I don't really quite remember, but sure, like following the conversation, I'm like, oh yeah. It's like there's this whole, you know, reunion thing that they do. And then there's like the Kiryu memoirs, which is like 110 spots on the map where you can go and Kiryu will tell a little story related to the other games, either based on that specific location or just like, this reminds me of that time I, you know, punched a shark or whatever.
Oh, this is absolutely a farewell game. Oh, God. Oh,
it really is.
every game, every big RPG series is like the 10 volume,
yeah,
1,000 pages per volume fantasy novel series.
Yeah.
Fuck.
I feel like they kind of investment with this one. Like, they didn't really set out making these games as like one grand saga for him, but I think at this point,
yeah,
they kind of have.
It's like, it's roughly the 20th anniversary game, and the funny thing about these games is like all of them take place in the year they came out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So like, there's a character who's a baby in Yakuza 6, and they're like they're like 7 in this game, and I'm just like, oh man, what the fuck?
We're growing up together.
All these characters are like aging in real time, and that's messed up because no other series, I think, does that.
Yeah, I don't know that. And
Kiryu himself's getting pretty old at this point. The funny thing is, like, Yakuza 1 and 2 are like a year apart.
Yeah.
They have always been cranking these games out. It's only recently where they get like 3 or 4 years. Oh yeah, this game actually mentions COVID, which I just thought was
what?
Funny.
What?
Because nothing else does.
That would probably shock the hell out of me if I just heard that come up. Because I've obviously played games where like pandemic came up. Because like 1,000 times resist.
Okay, maybe they say pandemic, but you know, it's very clear that they mentioned like the economic downturn that happened.
If something came up like if just a game said COVID, I think I would do like a quadruple take because that's just one of those weird. That's like when you hear. When you watch the first Pokemon movie and Ash makes a Minnesota Vikings reference, and my brain
working designs, how could you?
My brain screeches to a halt.
This felt much more natural, even though Yakuza 7 was in 2020, so they didn't predict they didn't predict it. But because they've had like, I think the opening scene in this game is a prequel, so it takes place in like 2022. Mm. So they mentioned, you know, the ongoing incident, basically.
The ongoing thing.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they say pandemic, at least, and how that's caused, you know, unemployment. Because Ichiban works for an unemployment agency at the start of the game. It's kind of relevant to his line of work.
Yeah.
Okay, I kind of lost my train. Yeah, so like they've really fleshed out the Kiryu stuff. The crazy thing is, like, they mention every game, including those spinoffs that even the fandom doesn't like to acknowledge.
Oh God.
There's a reference to the zombie game.
Well, I was about to say, the zombie game?
The zombie game gets one. Fist and the two North that Star? Takes... Okay, I don't think they do that because that's an IP thing.
Okay.
But they reference also the two that take place in like the 1800s.
Oh God, yeah. Ishimaru.
So Kiryu's just like... Ishin and Kenzan. Kenzan never got localized, though.
Right.
Only one of Kingdom Hearts 3 of
Yakuza. Pretty much. Yeah, so Kiryu mentions these dreams he had, so I'm like, oh my god, they tied it together. They say, in those three games are dreams he had.
Oh, that's
that were extremely vivid and lifelike. I guess they don't reference the PSP games, because those don't have him in them.
Mm.
But, and I haven't played those either, so it's like... It's fairly comprehensive.
Yeah.
Talking about that time Majima and him killed zombies was like, what the heck? Nobody even likes that game. I guess the last thing about the Kiryu stuff is like the ending of the game, the final achievement pops when you beat the game, and the name of the achievement made me start crying.
Oh no. Everybody that's new, this is Rhett's thing. Rhett cries a lot.
Yeah. The JRPG itself is good. I think I picked a good time to play it because I was going to have a lot of free time during the Christmas break. Because 7 kind of exhausted me with its length.
It sounded way too long, and it sounded just stupidly unbalanced at times. Like, there are people that I know that just get stuck in that game, and they would get stuck for, like, weeks.
I never got that stuck. I feel the difficulty spikes in 7 are unwarrantedly criticized.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. But...
You're going to call them all pussies, Rhett? Do it right now. Right now. Tell them they're all pussies. Do it.
There's one part where they're just like, hey, you should train in...
Tell them they're pussies, damn it!
Nah. Right. I mean, I understand, because there's one part where they're like, hey, you should do the training dojo, or whatever, the training tower. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't, you immediately get a boss fight that's like 10 levels higher than you.
Oh, okay. So this is something that like people just go, oh, I don't want to do the grindy thing that the game is making me do.
But
oh,
also, okay. The game making you do a grindy thing is kind of lame.
Kind of shitty. Yeah. Yeah. It's very Final Fantasy 13. You get to the tunnels and it's like, oh man, I bet we need to fight down here and get stronger. And you literally just said that out loud. Why did you say that out loud like that? That feels weird. That's a part of the script that somebody wrote and probably shouldn't have.
One thing about 7 on one of the difficult boss fights is you can realize a thing is that the character you're fighting won't hit women.
Yes!
So depending on how your party is set up,
you can
exploit that a little bit, because it's one of those games where if Ichiban gets knocked over, then the game is over.
Like
the,
right,
the lead, only the leader matters. So if you just keep healing him... You can just kind of tank it out, and you know which characters won't ever take damage.
All the girls. That's good. That's good.
But then there's another fight that's just a real bastard. Because there's characters from past Yakuza games that you fight that they're like, we can't have them be pussies. No. We have to make this boss fight really fucking hard. But yeah, 8 is a lot more balanced, I think, for a smoother experience. But because I'm a psycho and I saw people complaining this time that it was too easy.
Oh, you played on hard?
No, because hard is for New Game Plus.
Oh, okay.
And it starts everything at like level fucking 50.
Oh, jeez.
It's not for starting a new game.
Okay.
And also it's DLC, which is another thing people got real mad about.
That's remember that turd water we were talking about earlier?
Yeah.
That's real turd water right there.
People got real mad about the release of this because it's like a $70 game, and that New Game Plus is
in the 80s. In a $70 game, eat my whole asshole.
It's mostly negative on Steam, the DLC for...
Yeah, fuck that noise.
Pretty egregious. So someone made a mod, because they were probably pissed off about this, to raise the enemy HPs.
All right.
And they went psycho at the start, where it's like the default versions are like 50 times and 100 times.
Oh, that's a bit much. That's egregious.
Which is a bit much. But they did make like 2X and 3X versions and like, you know, all the lower numbers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just for a curiosity.
Just for a lark. A curiosity.
Like a laugh.
I started the game on like 4X.
Oh.
Which was fun for about one chapter. So I was watching a Let's Play just to see how the fights were going. So for them, it's like literally everything dies in one hit in chapter one. And for me, it's like Trails hard mode. Every fight is for survival is a grind. And I did this through the first like proper dungeon, where the boss fight summons like 6 other dudes with him. Like it's the Yakuza boss. And it's just like this really long brawl. And I'm like, this is really fun. I don't think I can do this for the whole game.
Yeah.
And then I watch the LP and they kill like 3 of the minions in like one attack. And I'm like, but I also don't want that experience.
Yeah, that's kind of a rough.
Set it to 2X.
So I set it to 2X. And honestly, I'm not sure if it was working the whole time. Because 3 was clearly too high. But then I'm not sure if the mod was working in Hawaii, which is most of the game.
Because you're totally decking everybody so thoroughly.
Like, it felt really balanced the whole time. And then there were a few points in Japan, notably, where it was like, okay, now everything's taking fucking forever to kill. Maybe this is the 2X version.
Because ultimately, that's just a badly balanced part of the game, like 7 had its points. So.
I mean, it was the final dungeon, so it wasn't like that bad, but it was.
Okay.
Yeah. But I just kind of felt, because of the whole 2-party thing, I just did notice that despite the levels being similar, the Japan team just felt a little weaker. So I'm like, is this the mod doing it or not? So I had a weird experience with this, because the one time I actually lost a fight definitively and had to reload from a previous save because there was no way, that happened in Hawaii. So it wasn't even because of the I don't know.
Strange.
I think despite my weird fucking around with it, I would probably say, hey, seems extremely balanced from my point of view. Like only 1 or 2 minor hiccups. I had a good time with this one. I don't think the story, I barely talked about like the actual game itself besides the curious stuff. I think the story isn't as strong as 7. mm-hmm. in a weird way. But 7 was like exhaustingly long.
Yeah.
It just had the better make you cry at the moment end. But I think what this game does first, the Kiryu send-off game is like exceptionally good.
Yeah, like the cool. hearing about like those points where you could just visit points of the map and like have these remnant, like that's the, like I'm a sucker so for that cool. kind of stuff. Like, oh God, you'd kill me. You'd kill me with that stuff. Like,
yeah, especially actually having played virtually every game.
Yeah.
Like, well, and being able to recall like all these little things he's mentioning.
There's something really nice about that.
There's also like callbacks to Yakuza 0, which is like the one game that doesn't take place like in the actual timeline because mm-hmm. the 80s.
Yeah.
But then having characters from that show up, they've aged a lot.
I imagine.
Yeah. It's.
What about the ones that are like in Samurai Times?
No, because those were dreams.
Those dreams?
Are, yeah.
Okay. Well, now I know.
And also all the characters in those are like, yeah, that's what kind of makes it make sense as a dream is because they just take all the faces from the characters in the modern games okay. and just apply them to historical figures.
It's the King of Fighters 98 dream match.
Yeah. Where... I'm trying to think of what else. Oh, I mean, Idolmaster did like literally the exact same thing with the exact same Fall of the Samurai period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Short story. Okay, one last thing is like you beat the game and a song plays and it's a song about
you cry.
Yes, but it could have gone there further. Cause in the logo for the game for Steam in the infinity symbol, you see like the 9 main characters and like like 5 are facing one way, 5 are facing the other way. Mm-hmm. And that's how I kind of figured out the two-party thing before it actually happened. Mm. And it's also, your friends are in the infinity symbol. So they sing a song at the end, and it's obviously, like, power of friendship stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, it's this moment that the whole theme of the game clicks for me. I go, oh, like, the infinite wealth is friendship. The infinite wealth is
friendship.
And I'm waiting for the song to drop that lyric. Make the name of the song Infinite Wealth, and it doesn't happen.
Oh, give me a break, man.
I'm just like, that could have been like the big, like, you strum the guitar, you bring it home, and you drop Infinite Wealth. Dun 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 dun. Like,
oh, man.
And it doesn't happen.
Just a missed opportunity there.
I don't know what the name of the song actually is. But yeah, I like this game a lot.
Incredible.
And then I almost immediately started playing another JRPG with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
The biggest one! The biggest, most contemporary RPG you could possibly fathom right now.
Hey, what if we took this really well-paced 90s RPG and split it into 3 games?
Yeah.
And then made each of them like 100 hours long.
Dude, I know, like, one is literally only like 35 to 40 hours. Even when you do all the, I played through that game. I did everything but one mm-hmm. side quest, and I finished it in like 42 hours.
Still substantially longer than the original game.
I don't know. I think that, I've seen a lot of people come out of that game at like 50 and 60 hours and not stopping.
Longer than the original game.
Longer. Again, my last Final Fantasy VII original playthrough was 27 hours, almost mm-hmm. on the dot. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's ridiculous. I'm just saying it is like. Substantially longer than. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, my replays of Final Fantasy VII, like if I were to replay it now, I know the game in and out. I could play it in 25 to 27 hours easy.
What if it took you 27 hours just to get to the Golden Saucer from Calm?
From Calm, that's ooh, that's a bit, man. Like that game scares me because I know that I am the unabashed Final Fantasy VII remake lover. Like I liked mm-hmm. that first one a lot. I'm like I was here for everything they were doing, even the story stuff that everybody hates. I liked. And
I will save this all for the next episode.
Sure, sure. But I'm just kind of saying that this game mm-hmm. almost seems like the fact that it feels like it went in a polypoison direction really bums me out.
Is it just because it's an open world game?
Open world, mini games, and the pacing is bad.
The pacing's crazy. It doesn't really feel that bad. And then I saw my count as where am I at right now? 65.2 hours. I'm in the jungle town.
Oh my god.
Finally. We've copied the same approach to remake we've copied an approach for our Final Fantasy VII remake from one of the best to ever do it, Peter Jackson's The Hobbit. What if we take a 150-page book and make it three to 4-hour movies?
3 4-hour movies.
If finally.
That's like remake pacing. This is something beyond.
This is something. This is beyond Peter Jackson's The Hobbit.
Oh my god!
I'm excited. I'm glad that this is treating you well because
yeah,
I was
like, I didn't think that this would be a Rhett thing. Like, so when Rhett mm-hmm. picked it up, I was just like, well, that's a. And then, you know, a week later, okay. Rhett's got like 60 hours. Like, what is happening here?
Yeah. It went fast. Okay, I will present 2 points of data for you.
Sure.
The first is that remake, despite my misgivings with the last 2 hours of that game, mm-hmm. was my number 3 on the game of the year.
Shit, it year. Was. Yeah.
Despite it fucking tripping on its face and breaking its neck at the end, it still ended up number 3, which was dire.
Also, go ahead.
The JRPG I immediately picked up after Yakuza was not this. It was Neptunia Sisters versus Sisters.
Oh god, yeah, right. That.
And I got so immediately frustrated with that that I saw a remake or Rebirth coming to Steam and just went, fuck it. I'm gonna have more fun with that.
We ballin'.
We ball. Oh my god, man, what is Neptunia? God, what happened?
The fact that
man?
The Neptunia game runs so much worse.
That is crazy! I you know have some a rig people... that is running Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I assume, very well, and the fucking Neptunia game is just barely chugging to the finish line.
The Neptunia one has a very specific stutter bug that was driving me bonkers.
Oh my god.
I recorded it. To see what was going on, it's like every fifth frame moves the camera not as much as the others.
That's ugly. That's crazy. Ugly. That's sinful.
It's like it's not even that it fully halts, it's that it just moves a little bit.
Yeah.
It just, you can't smoothly scroll the camera. It's nuts.
Nope. Could not. No, that would drive me there. That would drive me nuts.
Killer.
And then there's just the combat system, which I went, oh my god, what are you?
Yeah,
going from that attempt at real time combat to Final Fantasy VII's
night and day,
night and
killer,
not even night and day, like Electron versus Size of the Universe. Just like, oh, every other action RPG needs to just pack it up and give up. Besides, like
action RPGs. We're talking
like the hybrids.
Yeah, this is a like, hybrid. This is a Tales of
fucking Xeria.
Is air combat still bad? I guess we can table the Final Fantasy VII stuff till next time. Because I am interested in it.
And I don't even know if questions. I'll be done by next time.
Yeah, right. That thing's a monster. But yeah. Anything else?
Not. That's about it for me.
All right.
Same here.
Well, with that said, we are going to go ahead and start wrapping things up. I know that that's a lot brisker than a lot of people who are familiar with our previous work may imagine, but or may be ready for, or may be used to. However, I was trying to phrase that and failed in spectacular fashion. But yeah, we're going to be doing very brisk episodes from here on. We're going to do shorter shows. A little more. I think these are a little more manageable, easy to sit down and listen to on your lunch break, and then we're gone, and then we'll be back in another couple weeks or so. So
your nice 2-hour lunch
your
break,
your nice little there hour and a half lunch break,
less Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and more ease.
Yeah,
easy. John, you're talking about classic ease. I played ease. What is it, 10? Nordics?
Nordics,
that was not a good one with, like, brisk, super fast either.
That's the reason I haven't jumped into that one.
They really got into their trails.
They trails
bag.
It up.
Yeah, they got into their trails bag on that one. Well, yeah. So that's going to do it for us this time around. We'll, of course, be back next time. But before we get on out of here, we're going to throw it to John Thayer and ask, where can the fine internet folks at home find you if they want to keep up with whatever it is that you're doing?
I've made a lot of games since last time. You can play them at farawaytimes.itch.io. And I have a website again at farawaytimes.com. I've got links to all my stuff on there. I'm on Mastodon and Blue Sky.
Nice. What is your name on those? Is it just Faraway Times or?
It's farawaytimes.bluesky.bsky.
Okay. I don't pay attention to people's like actual handles. I just see their display name. So I never memorize the @s.
Yeah.
Rhett!
Farawaytimes.com. Links to everything.
Rhett, where can the internet folks at home find you?
I don't know. I've looked up my website to make sure that it still works, even though the movies aren't there. The games are still there.
You need to update your website, Rhett. Why aren't you updating your website?
That is at inconsequentialexistence.com.
Are you going to update it? It should be updated sometime soon. You should really update it.
Apparently, I updated it in 2023. Go me.
Look at you. Look at you.
You can also find me watching a lot of Hololive streams.
Yeah. Yeah. Follow him on Blue Sky and Twitter. He's going to get you a bunch of anime titties on your timeline if you want.
Especially the Twitter one. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Twitter has turned into just, hey, look, this is anime titty land, and welcome. And I'm okay with it, because I nuked my Poly Plushie account last night. I killed all the followers, and I deleted all the tweets.
You killed them?
Yeah,
You killed your followers?
I killed every last one.
Well, you were busy driving around committing a lot of murders last night.
There's a reason that I only talked like 18 minutes, okay? Look. But you can find me on at polyplushy.bluesky.social. I think that's how those go.
You killed your Twitter account the day before we recorded a new podcast episode.
I did.
Who's checking Twitter?
I literally only...
If anybody was going to get that one last update of, hey, we're over here now, there's a new episode. You killed them.
I killed them just like I'll kill you. But remember, of course, before I do that, I will definitely reassure you that we are the podcast that loves you.
Aww.
We're the only ones that love you.